listening to Punisher Waterfowls, the Union 0430 podcast. Brought to you by Real Geese Decoys, the most technologically advanced silhouette decoy on the market. First Light, the best hunting gear on the planet. Go farther, stay longer. And Ducklander Calls, tradition, education, and quality, built to hunt.
Hey everybody, welcome back to the Union 0430 episode 182. Listen, before we get into introductions, please check out our sponsors, and we are so grateful to have them. We are so grateful for the support that Craig Mintz and Real Geese and Bobby Hayes with Ducklander Calls and our good friend Logan Williams at First Light. And of course, I would be remiss if I did not mention the voice of the Union 0430, Captain Jeff Coates, all the way in Maryland. And if you are watching, then, well, Phil just stepped out, but there he is. Phil's here, Craig is here, Mark is here, and coming from the big metropolis of Hanover, Ontario, we have the horse. And that's how I'm going to refer to them for the rest of the show, the horse.
The horse.
It sounds so dirty otherwise.
The
yeah.
horse. The
it's
horse.
Like trying to say Worcestershire sauce.
Yeah, maybe we should just.
Maybe we'll stick to Steve and Lorianne.
Maybe that's good.
Yeah, maybe that's good. So, So thanks, guys, for coming on. It's been a while. It's been a real long time since we've had Steve on, because it was a long while back when Steve was on the show. Lorianne,
last episode though.
What's that?
I was the first person to do back-to-back episodes.
Were you really?
I think so.
Ooh, I think that's what we talked about. Because
you would have been if you did it.
Yeah.
Well, yeah, because Steve came on and shot the shit with us, and then we had him come on when Hank. When Hank Shaw came on. Yeah, Hank Shaw, the hunter gatherer.
The singer-songwriter.
No. And I hope you're talking about Junior, not Senior. But
absolutely.
Absolutely. Thanks, guys, for coming on. It's great to see you. Obviously, it was only last month where we were hanging out down at the Toronto Sportsman Show, so it hasn't been that long since you've seen all of us, because now you could say you've seen Mark there, seeing as though he made the trip all the way up from Nova Scotia. Philly only graced us for a day, and Craig only hung out with us for about 2 days. Yeah, sorry, Philly. But Craig was only there for like an hour because he was chasing around rugrats and stuff. So he didn't get to hang out. But he probably hung out with you guys more than he did with us. Just saying. But I don't
know. I don't know about that. He was in and out pretty quick. I think Carrie came over more than Craig did.
Oh.
Yeah.
I'm on the hook next year.
Even when Carrie tried to rush me out the door and she took the kids, like, fine, we're going to the car, meet us whenever you're done. And then I ran into them back at Stephen Lorianne's booth, and she was still there.
Yeah.
Oh, really? Yeah. That's funny.
It was an empty threat.
Yeah.
But we got to see them the other weekend.
Okay.
So we made up for it.
Oh, yeah, right. Yeah, because we did a show last week that you ended the show, Craig, and you said that Craig and or that Lori and Steve were like en route. Was that last week?
2 weeks ago.
Okay.
Yeah.
So in pure Union 0430 form, there is absolutely no structure to this show whatsoever. It is going to be fly by the seat of our pants here. So jump in whenever you have something that you want to talk about, because this one is going to be all over the place, ladies and gentlemen. And you know what? I do have to thank everybody, because like Craig said, and Lorianne and Steve, I've heard you guys say it as well, that you do enjoy the episodes when it's not really a big guest on the show, when it's really just us shooting the shit and stuff like that, right? So to us, you are a bit of a big deal, Lorianne, but you're still but you're still our people, if that makes sense. So even though you're a big deal, I still keep you at the same level of, as us retrobates down here, right? So
first of all, I may get too big for my britches, but that's only because Steve's cooking. But no, I don't view myself that way, honestly. But I do thank you for thinking that of me. I don't know if you guys know this,
but
I'm kind of a big deal.
Have many leather bound books. Many leather bound books.
Rich mahogany.
That's right.
I love scotch.
I did see a meme the other day, and it's funny that this was a meme because it said 15 years ago, before memes were created, all dudes did was sit around for an hour and just quote Anchorman, because they didn't have, memes weren't created at that time, so they didn't have the ability to talk about the memes, so they just sat around and quoted Anchorman.
Hey, or 60% of the time, it works every time.
Absolutely.
I love Lamp.
What's that?
I love Lamp.
take it back further to Seinfeld and The Simpsons.
Mm.
Oh, The Simpsons quotes never die.
No, they'll never die. No. But
especially,
you know what?
The I'm in danger.
I'm in danger. The problem with The Simpsons quotes is that I stopped watching The Simpsons a long time ago, so there's a generation of people that are watching The Simpsons that know way more about it now than what I do. Because I stopped watching it, surprisingly, probably around the same time that I got married. Yeah. Funny how that worked out for me.
I didn't stop.
No?
Yeah.
No.
Mm. Your wife's cool then.
No, I just...
More you're supposed to say yes. You're not supposed to start off with a hard no.
I think
that show's been on so long, though, the new generations haven't seen any of the old, like, first 10 years that have all the really good quotes in them.
Yeah, fair. I tell you what I have got into, and it's my, don't judge me to the people that are listening.
Oh, I'm judging.
But my kids got me into South Park, and I was never a South Park fan first when it came out. Like, I thought it was stupid. I didn't like it. And my oldest, my daughter, she got me into it, and dude, that is a funny fucking show.
Like, I haven't watched it in years. Like, when I was in high school, like, you know, I used to babysit and stuff. Like, that was just what I'd watch all night, every night with South Park.
Well, there's some, I don't know how old these episodes are, but there's some funny ones where they make fun of Canada and the whole, the Prince of Canada and all this stuff. Like, it's pretty fucking funny, I gotta admit.
I always love the torch lighter for the cigar.
You need one of those push button ones, buddy. Or is that a push button?
Yeah, that's a push button one.
I'm just waiting for the day he's had too many drinks and he's lighting up that cigar without his eyebrows.
Yeah.
Yep.
It's bound to happen. I'm waiting for Philly just to have enough of me with that blowtorch, and he'll just come to me and be like, here, have a fucking cigar torch and stop using that fucking thing.
Like a Neanderthal.
Like a Neanderthal, that's me. Hey, listen. Let's talk about some hunting here before everybody starts fucking clicking us off here. Oh, because
for the record, what? I heard your guys' deer conversation last week.
Oh, boy.
You did a lot of deer talk.
Was there ever a lot of deer?
I'm so proud of you.
No, I was not happy about that. But I was somewhat not myself last week. I may have been chemically induced.
You were just a one-man wrecking crew having the time of your life.
Yeah, I have my moments. No, but I did want to start. I did want to touch on this because we got Lori on, and Craig, you were there. Obviously, Steve, you were there. But just was it just last weekend or the weekend before?
Two weeks ago.
So you had the ladies only, which is amazing, because I know you've done some heavy lady stuff, but the turkey event in the past has been a co-ed thing, and this year has really been your first women's only, correct?
No, but that's okay.
I think Craig but told me that, tried, so Craig,
we tried
strike one, positive. Buddy. Strike
I
one.
Said last year was co-ed. The year before that was women's only.
It's okay. It's
strike
okay.
One, Craig.
No, that's my fault. I didn't fully explain it to him. Don't take the strike for him. Every year we try and flip-flop it between a ladies this year and then a co-ed one next year.
You're gender inclusive.
Yes.
I like that.
Yeah. Only because, like I said to a lot of the people, I started off CSS just ladies only because there was a lot of ladies out there who didn't have any support. And then it was the ladies like, well, I'd really like to get my kids into it. I'm like, okay, cool. You know what? Yes, we'll open it up to the youth as well. And then there was a lot of guys reaching out and they're like, listen, I would love to get into hunting, but anytime I've gone out with my guy, like my buddies, they just give me such shit because I don't know what they know because their dads did it, their grandpas did it. I had nobody and they're really giving me a hard time. And I'm like, you know what? We're going to have to start helping the guys too, because there seems to be like that two generation gap where a bunch of guys, their dads or their family didn't hunt. So that's kind of how we started getting more into co-ed events as well, because there's such a need to help everybody.
And there was a lot of couples.
And tons of couples, yeah.
A lot of couples, like, both decided to just get into it, or one of them really wanted to, so the other one's like, yeah, I'm going to support you, and this would be something fun we could do together. So we end up with a ton of couples, like, reaching out.
Mm-hmm.
Would you say that, on the average, that women are a lot more open to the idea of attending seminars where they're learning vice men. So, and the reason why, and I want to preface that by saying, you know, when you say, like, you know, ladies go out and they hang out with the dudes, and the dudes already know shit because their dads or whoever taught it to them. And the ladies just like, well, fuck, I don't know. So I'm just going to do a seminar and I'm going to learn and be as educated or more than what you are. Whereas do you find dudes would be open to seminars, or is that a female thing where they're just more accepting of the idea?
And I think that's a great question. And I would have answered yes to that when I first started. When we first started doing CSS, absolutely, yes. Ladies were more willing to admit that they didn't know something and wanted to gain more knowledge via hands-on experiences. But I've seen a huge shift where it's like everybody's kind of wanting the same knowledge now. There's been lots of guys who come to the co-ed events. They have a little bit of knowledge and maybe a little bit of experience, but it's all second or third hand from their buddies. And they're like, okay, I see how you guys do it, but maybe I can learn this way before, you know, anybody really picks up any bad habits.
Yeah, that makes sense.
And honestly, I would say the guys that come to the intro to turkey hunting or the intro to waterfowl hunting, even the ladies, they really want to be there because they really want to learn.
Okay. Yeah.
So I would say when I first started, yes, it was only the ladies who were willing to acknowledge that they didn't know and wanted the knowledge. Whereas now it's everybody's, they're like, yes, please give me all of the information. I'm going to, you know, soak it up like a sponge. And yeah, it's everybody now.
Okay. So
one thing I found this was the third year that I've helped them do it, and we've held it at our club locally. It was females only the first year, and then co-ed, and then women again this year. And last year with the co-ed, a lot of the guys were from our club as well, and some being one guy who actually teaches the hunter safety course. Oops. And he's hunted turkey, and he sent a lot of women to the course this year. But he's hunted for years, and he came out to it. But then there's a couple other guys who are club members that still haven't hunted, really. Like, they joined the club for the shooting range aspect of it.
Right, right.
They're trying to get into hunting. And, like, yeah, everybody was just soaking everything up. There was one guy, I think, last year who, of course, there's always that one guy that argues with the CO that's there to present about the laws and stuff like that. But other than that, like, the 3 years, everybody's been really good and just taking it all in.
And we do get the odd, it's the odd stuff where there's a couple where it's the woman really wants to go. The guy doesn't think he needs to go, but is kind of dragged along because she doesn't want to go on her own. Right. So you always get that one guy who's maybe in there that has some experience that then just thinks it's not for him. But even then, they still usually end up having a good time because it's still interactive and there's still something that comes along that they get to, a trick they get to pick up, or again, just they get to have fun and hang out with other like-minded people.
Well, I would think that, for the guys, so unless you are fucking Jim Shockey or someone like that, that's, you know, hunted for years and years and years, I'd find it hard to believe that someone would come to a seminar and not learn at least one thing, regardless of your experience. Like, you'll learn something.
Well, and like you guys have said on the show before, it's like the good thing about hunting with other people in different areas, it's, you know, you may do it a certain way because you've always hunted this property and the birds have always done the same thing, but when Lori Ann puts together the team of people helping and teaching that day, like, everybody's got great experiences and hunting different, like, everybody's from all over the place too. So everybody's hunting different areas and you're picking up different techniques and different styles, different locations and stuff like that. So yeah, like, there's always something to learn, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. Regardless of who you are not above knowledge and learning.
Yeah, it's so true, honestly. Yeah. You're never too old to learn and you're never too young to learn. Like, I do wish sometimes that some of our participants, I think, was it last year? No, 2 years ago, we had a couple of younger teenage ladies come out, and that was awesome. But I think that was the last time we had, like, youth
really
sign up for it.
That was too bad.
Yeah, I thought there was a young
prospect to, like, as a possible thing in the future, to do a youth hunt for whoever, whether it's males or females or both.
Would it be possible? Yeah, absolutely. Honestly, most of our events, like, there's no, like, an age requirement, like, for, like, the waterfowl hunt, the pheasant hunt. It's not a 18 plus, or, you know what I mean, a 16 plus. So if we did have a couple of apprentice hunters want to do it, we could make that happen for sure.
Yeah, if you just specifically targeted having younger people under the age of 18 or something, right?
Yeah.
But Mark, like, your days from in the Ottawa Valley, the upper Ottawa Valley, and that was a very successful youth program that you guys had up there. Mm-hmm. But there was times even up there, like, you really had to build the program to make the youth, I don't know the word that I'm trying to use, but, like, they had to put their money up front, right? Like, you couldn't just wait for them to show up the day of, because there was a lot of people would skip out and they wouldn't come, or they'd say they would come and then they wouldn't actually show up. So, like, if my memory is correct, like, when you guys used to do it, like, the kid had to pay up front.
There was a little more to it. These people were doing their hunter safety course and their firearms course.
Yeah, that's what I mean, right? Like, they had
to, it was a little different that way. So, yes, they had to put money up front because they had to do those courses. Everything else was donated.
Yeah. No, I get that, but because they went ahead and had to pay for their hunter education and their hunter education and their firearms course, because they had already had to put that money in, well, then they were not obligated, but they were in, right? Like, they were already, they've shown that, yeah, listen, I'm serious with this, as opposed of some of the youth and some of the other hunts that's done around, where it's just, hey, listen, just show up, we got everything, all you need to do is just have your bird stamp and your small games license, and you just show up and we'll do this thing. Well, in that case, there's usually always a few people that fucking skip out, right? They don't follow through, or it's a shitty morning and they're like, well, I'm not going out in the rain. And
We were pretty successful, though, for what we had.
Yeah.
Regardless of money up front, we usually only had on the actual day of the hunt maybe one or two people who wouldn't make it.
Right, right.
For whatever reason.
Mm-hmm.
But it was a lot more substantial. Like, yeah, I can understand where, Lorianne, where you guys are going with it. If you're just going to have some young people come out, yeah, it would be to get some sort of dedication so they showed up would be a little different because there's nothing for them to lose if they don't show up, right?
Exactly, yeah.
Yeah.
Especially if I went through one of the outfitters up here and was like, hey, would you mind, you know, donating a waterfowl hunt to youth? You know, I'll have mentors. So that way, you know, for the gun sharing aspect of it. And then for none of them to show up and then him also be out all of that money. So
yeah. It's hard to give away free stuff. Like for stuff like that, like you said, Damien, it's usually like even just like having done some DU stuff, like when you have like free events, it's lots of people say they're going to show up and you have all this planning that you've got to do. And then nobody shows up because like you said, there's no skin in the game, right? They're not out any money if they don't show
up. That's right.
Yeah. It's funny how hard it can be to host something free.
Craig, as I'll call you an outsider just because you don't have a stake in Canadian sportswoman society, but you know, as an outsider, and you've come and you've helped in years now, you've helped with this. Like, what's the trend that you're seeing? And I'm not trying to steal any of your thunder, Lori, but, you know, what are the things that you've noticed with regards to, you know, youth, female, male, on all levels of experience? What are you seeing as a guy that's coming to volunteer and help out Lorianne pull this off? Like, what are you seeing?
I think trend-wise, it's hard to say because there really isn't anything. Like, everybody, the few times I've been there, it's the same in the fact that everybody's different. Like, there's people, especially the women's only events, there's women who they've never held a gun. They may not even actually be interested in hunting. They're just there for something cool to do. There's women who have maybe hunted a little bit or shot a little bit. Like some show up, they actually already own their own guns, but they haven't done anything with them yet.
Right.
So they've already kind of jumped full in. But yeah, like there's, yeah, I guess trend would be hard to say just because I don't see anything. It's just, there's a bit of everything all the time. And I think that's the best part. It's just that there's such a variety of people coming and backgrounds. And like everybody, like the three times I've been there, like it's just the best day anybody's ever had. Like it's just everybody's smiling, everybody's having a great time. And usually, because I'm usually helping Steve on the gun range, so we're the last people to come up at the end of the day, and the women are already starting to leave, and it's all smiles. Like everybody's all like, and you're seeing, like you're listening to everybody talk, and like they're all good new friends, right? Like you're already hearing these women setting up hunting trips together and stuff like that, and they're coming from all over the province too, right? So it's not like many of them are coming together. These are all brand new connections and kind of wide spanning connections.
That's a good point that you brought up, Lori, or Craig. But Lori, I know the education side of things was a big thing for you when it come to starting Canadian Sportswoman Society, right? Like getting the ladies out and giving them that space where they can feel comfortable and learning and the whole bit. But this community that you've made now, because listen, like even for me, and I haven't, I think I've only ever attended one or two events that you've done over the years, but you've got a very, very large network of ladies now that continually show up every year for these seminars. I don't know how many goddamn people you had at the Toronto Sportsman Show helping you with the booth, but there was a fucking small army of yous down there. You know, so you've created a very, very cool community here. And was that something that was in the back of your head, or is that just something that happened that you didn't know was going to happen because your main goal was going to be education?
So my main goal was definitely going to be the hands-on learning aspect of it, because I if I'm learning something, I can't just read it and it stays and then I can apply it. That's not how I learn. I am a very much hands-on learning style person. It's the only way it's going to stick. So putting the education portion of it was, yeah, my first and foremost primary goal. The community aspect just happened naturally.
Organically, to be honest.
I wasn't expecting it, to be honest. When we first started CSS, we had 4 events a year, and then there became such a demand for more and more and more, and we just keep going. Like, the last couple of years has been 20 plus events in a year, and I still have people reaching out for, would you be able to run something like this? Okay, cool. Let's see how we can make that happen. The community wise, yeah, it happened organically, and it's been awesome, honestly. Like, so far it's very much been like making extra family, to be honest.
Yeah, that's fair. Steve, and listen, I get it, she's sitting right next to you and you have to be very but you know, you see it, you're really the Jesus, that was a lot of feedback. You really are the only person that sees it from beginning to end, right? Like, you're overwatching a bird's eye view. You see everything. Yeah. So, you know, from Lori's very humble starts to this crazy idea of trying to get women in Ontario together to hunt to where it is today. And listen, you're a big part of it too, right? Like, and I know Lori will always say that, but you know, from your standpoint, what have you seen over the last bunch of years? And listen, all these events, you're usually tagging along too, right?
For the most part, I don't go on all the trips.
Yeah.
They're usually meant to be more ladies only. So unless they need a camp chef, I stay out of those ones. But it's been incredible. I mean, when she first started to have the idea of wanting to do it and saying, can we actually do this? I liked that part because I like being creative. Mm-hmm. So it was the problem is we want to do this, but we don't know how, where do we start? And coming up with all those ideas was the part that I really enjoyed. We could show people this because I think it'd be really cool if we had a station that did this, because it would be hands-on or it'd be interactive. And, oh yeah, we could totally accomplish that by doing this. Or if we get someone to help do this, I think it'd be really cool for the people who would really enjoy that. So I really like that. And then to see it grow where we had the attendance, and then all of a sudden it was the attendance, you know, was filling up pretty quickly. And you start seeing it expand to then, well, okay, what other things can we offer people, like doing the hunts and the fishing trips, where it's giving people that safe, I guess. I think that people do it because it's not that some people couldn't go out and do it on their own, but it's that sense of, okay, somebody's vetted this. Yeah. Somebody knows the process, so now mm-hmm. I feel comfortable partaking because I wouldn't know where to begin.
Right.
And so then these trips, and then to see a lot of these ladies come back like year after year to do these trips, and they become friends, and the circle of friends grow, and then all the new girls that come into this almost chaos of a friend circle, but all are welcome, and it just, every year it's this blend of returnees and this blend of new people come in. And I'm even surprised, you know, how much the seminars, even how we get repeat people coming to these seminars, because you would think once they've heard it, they would feel, oh, I've heard it all. But there's so many times that we get people come out like 2 years in a row or something to these events. It's been incredible. And then to see it evolve as far as like the Toronto Sportsman Show and all that kind of accomplishment of like the people that come up and really want to be supportive of it is pretty cool to see how it just started off with, hey, we'll run something locally at my aunt's farm. You know, we're just going to shoot some skeet and blow some goose and duck calls at my aunt's farm, to you know, running stuff at actual, like, really nice sportsmen's clubs, like in Midland, and you know, getting opportunities and invite people up to, you know, they're going up north, and people all having these really new experiences at the same time together. It's been pretty crazy to see just, like, how much it's grown in the last 5 years.
You know, and I think it would be in bad taste if I didn't at least bring up the fact, and I'm sure I've said it on this show before, but our success, so the Punisher Waterfowl brand success at the Toronto Sportsman Show, that is 100% due to, hey, I'm going to get a hand pop up here now. Okay. That's due to Lorianne, right? Because that first year, Mark, remember, and Phil, when we went down that first year, it was Lorianne that donated that space to us and let us come in for free and occupy a little bit of space in her booth for us to see if this was something that we wanted to explore, and if we wanted to start showing up at the Toronto Sportsman Show. And it was, you know, at that show, after that show was over, that I went to the general manager and I said, hey, listen, you're missing out here. You've got no waterfowl hunting whatsoever here. And that's when I pitched the idea of the refuge. But that is all because of Lorianne as well. So, like, your community, the whole idea of the Canadian Sportswoman Society, it is not tied 100% to just ladies. This community, this giving nature that you have has affected, it's affected my brand, and it's a big reason why some of the successes that I have right now is because of you. So,
well, I appreciate that, but that was like, I was not expecting you to go full sap. I've not had a rum for that. I will say, though, and I've had this conversation with you before, I've always been in the thought process of, I didn't get here on my own.
Mm-hmm. Of course.
If I have something to share, obviously I'm going to share it. Because why wouldn't I?
Yeah. No, absolutely. No, I get it. And I won't mention names, but it was only a couple weeks ago, I had a friend who I've only ever met personally once, that we've shaken hands, but we've talked online a bunch of times. But anyways, I hooked him up with some stuff, or introduced him to some people, I should say. I didn't hook him up with nothing. I introduced him to some people. That was all on him. But anyways, he wrote me back and he was like, hey, thanks so much for this. I hope I can repay you. And I just replied back. I was like, dude, you don't have to repay me. Like, we've got to get away. Listen, I'm in a business. I'm trying to make money, but not everything you do for somebody has to be repaid. You can do a solid to somebody just out of the goodness of your heart and not expect anything in return. And that was really, and then a real feather in my cap. And I do have to say this because I do want to give him a shout out because I know he listens to the show every week. And that's Brian Ellithorpe, who sent me a message today and told me that Tangle Free has bought all of his pictures for the last year, and they're buying them and using them in their own social media. And it was, and again, it's not me tooting my own horn, but I had introduced Brian to Corey Foskett and that whole bit, right? So he had fired me off a message today and he was like, listen, this is, thanks, man. And that's not for me to be patting myself on the back. That's more or less for me to say congratulations to Brian Ellithorpe, because he's the one that put in all the hard work. And, you know, you facilitate, and Lori, you see this all the time, and Phil, Craig, Mark, you guys see it all the time, because you do, you all of yous do it. You introduce people to people who you think you should know, and then something will always come out of it, right? There's usually always something. It may not be a big monetary reward for it, but there's usually always something good that comes out of some of these relationships, right? And that's what you did. So that's what you did for Punisher Waterfowl and getting us into the Toronto Sportsman Show and the whole bit. So I got to thank you there. But before you get too sappy and everything, I'm going to totally shut this fucking subject down, and we're going to switch to Steve so that you don't a chance. So you don't get a chance to fucking reply to it.
But you supported us first.
But I want. But I did want to bring up. Yeah, well, I'm trying to deflect. But I did want to. But I did want to bring up this fact, and this has been a couple years in the making, easy. And we've been saying it, and anybody that has been to one of Lorianne's events, or even any, I believe, Steve, you even helped cook at one of mine one time. So good job, Lori, because you managed to get them to sit down and start to create the fucking cookbook. And anybody that has followed Steve on social media, and you would see the meals that he makes for his family, is out of this fucking world. And you would think you're at a five-star restaurant, and it's the presentation of the plates and everything, right? Like, it's the whole kit and caboodle. And you know what, buddy? I really want to dive into this, because I'm going to tell you, I'm going to be the first person that wants one of your books.
Autographed.
100% autographed. But I would like to get an update. And for the millions of fans, they would like to know too, right? Absolutely. Like, let's get an update on where this cookbook is at, and when we can expect to see it. Because now it's real. Now it's been talked about.
Now you're calling it out on the whole entire internet. Thanks.
That's right. Millions of fans, buds.
So yeah, I had enough people, and I procrastinated a lot because I'm really good at it. And I've been always recording my recipes down, but then my hiccup was always the hurdle of going like, well, I don't know what to do with it. Like, you know, I can type it out, but that doesn't make it a book, you know? Right. And then I was approached by some really cool people. I didn't know we were talking about this tonight, so I did not talk to them.
So I can tell you that Lori Ann knew that we were talking about this tonight.
Of course she did. Look how much joy she takes in putting me on the spot. I had some really good people approach. I've had lots of people approach to help with little things, but I actually got approached then at the Sportsman Show by some really awesome people that I won't say their names right now, just because I don't know if I should or if I'm allowed to.
That's fair.
But have offered to help with the part that I don't know, which is the how do you actually get it into a book and
publishing and all that.
Publish it and distribute it, and like, you know, getting those connections with a printing company so that you can actually print it in a quantity that makes it affordable for people and get enough of them over that if as many people that say they want a book take a book, you know, that it's a lot. And to try and do that on your own would be next to impossible to fund that. So I had some really cool people approach me. I can't thank them enough. And at some point in time, I can publicly thank them.
Yeah.
But they kind of made it so that I had no more excuses after that. So I'm in the editing phase right now. I had all of my scribblings and scratches converted over to an electronic file, so now I'm going through all them and just kind of making sure there's trying to take out all the spelling mistakes and the scratches and going back through. So I'm hoping to finish editing it this soon, finish going through all that editing, and then work on getting some people to test them outside of my palette, mm-hmm. and test some of the stuff out and make sure that all works and we're all happy with it. And then, yeah, I'm really hoping by maybe this time next year, I'd have like some solid books in hand or
right.
Someday, maybe even in time for the Sportsman Show.
Oh, that would be,
I just want your pastrami recipe.
Well, yeah,
I can send it.
But then, you know what? And here I am just gonna insert a great idea here, and this is probably gonna, we'll see who rolls their eyes here, but you know, you're doing that book like the picture, like Philly, you gotta like grease the wheels here. You gotta get in and be the photographer for this fucking book, Philly. You got to, dude. You got to. I'm not putting any pressure on anybody or anything like that, but,
right?
You know, yeah.
No pressure.
No pressure.
I would gladly come and help the lovely horses.
The horses.
The horses.
Well, what if I said you didn't get to eat it?
Try my best.
I withdraw my
But I got zero willpower. None. You turn your back, it's like a fucking lab eating kibble.
What was it you brought to
the chocolate dog guy? I had one myself. I know what happens when you leave food out near them.
Steve, what was it you brought to the Toronto Sportsman Show? Was that the pastrami that you brought for us?
Yeah, so I brought the goose pastrami along, and I think everybody in the refuge there was walking around with a red Solo cup full of meat.
I missed out, unfortunately.
Oh, did
and
you?
Then I was also giving away caramels. So I had made caramels using duck fat and rendered bear fat.
I did not try this. I did not either.
They all stick
together. I had the pastrami when we shared the booth a couple years ago.
Mm-hmm.
And that was phenomenal.
Steve, maybe this is a dumb question, but all of your recipes or your idea for the book, all of your recipes, is that going to be all wild game?
Yeah, the idea is, like, yes, all the recipes I put into it are going to reference using wild game.
Okay.
But at the same time, I'm going to be putting in the book that no recipe is wild game specific, because it's the same reason as how I made this stuff with wild game, was taking regular recipes that I seen that interested me to try and make, and go, well, how can I incorporate in the meats that I have in my freezer, and how can I incorporate in the stuff that I want my kids to eat so that they're good, that they're comfortable. I want my kids exposed to not only all the different cultures I try to cook, but then all the different game that we're bringing home, which, you know, has led me to, you know, even trying some new game meats and stuff that I wasn't necessarily going to even try on my own, because the kids then have pushed that to go, well, are we going to try and eat that? Like, I guess we are now. Exactly, right? Like, I would have, you know, trying coyote was always something that was in the back of my head, but I certainly wasn't seeking it out. But when the opportunity came, and then my boy's like, well, are we going to eat it? Because he doesn't have social media and stuff, so he doesn't see people go, oh, that's disgusting, and freak out about it. So all he knows is that's an animal. We eat animals. We eat what we hunt.
Yeah.
And so, therefore, we're trying it out. Same as crow. You know, we know the stuff is edible. It's just, by and large, it's not common. It's not something you would normally do. But you can't say you can't eat it. So let's give it a try. You don't know till you try it. So, but no, none of the recipes are stuff that you can't use regular meats, domesticated meats for.
Right.
But it really all comes down to what best cuts of meat go with the better recipes. And that's why wild game sometimes can lend itself to different recipes so well, because you have really lean meat, so it's kind of a healthier option, or you also have those, what people call different cuts of wild game that tend to be really tough, that then lend themselves to some of our common recipes that are actually perfect for using up those tough cuts, like people not liking goose legs or turkey legs or using the shanks and things like that, that are meat that sometimes just either ends up discarded or in the hamburger pile. But there are recipes out there using domestic animals that are perfect for the wild game.
And Steve's an amazing resource too, because, like, there'd be times where if I'm fishing with the kids or we're hunting or whatever, and it's like, well, the one time I was ice fishing with Caleb, and first time ever we started catching lake herring. So right away I'm on the phone to Steve, like, all right, what do we do? How am I doing this? What kind of ideas have you got? And pretty much, and most times when I cook something, it's like I'm taking a picture, because in my head it's like, well, I got to tell Steve about this. Steve's going to be so proud of what I've done.
Yeah,
right?
Yeah.
Which I love it. I love when you message me and you see, like, the progress over the day, because I'm just as excited come dinner time, because he sends me a picture to be like, oh, it's so good. And it's usually half eaten and destroyed it. And it's like, that's awesome. I'm more than happy to help with that.
Yeah, so I message Steve, it's, you know, I've got this cut. What should I do? And it's like, okay, well, that throw it in the pressure cooker, and then you're going to do this, and like he'll walk me through it. You know, I've got food all over my hands, and I'm constantly messaging him back and forth, just trying to have him walk me through step by step, and it's awesome. Like, it's resulted in some really good stuff.
And not only, and I think I really need to add some emphasis to the fact, listen, all of us hunt and we eat what we hunt, right? And that's no different. And all of us are the same when it comes to that. But you guys rely, your diet relies heavily on wild game, right? Like, you guys eat a lot of wild game. So, yeah. Like, I hunt ducks and geese. Like, really, that's the only thing. I'll go out for turkey. But again, like, it's not the be-all, end-all. Like, I'm not a fanatic like how some people are. But you guys are constantly rolling from species to species to species to species to fill your freezer. And I don't think, you know, when we talk about this cookbook and the fact that, you know, you can use all wild game or you can substitute it with some domesticated meat or whatever, but this cookbook came, not only is it a good idea and something that you wanted to do, but it came at an, I don't want to say necessity, because necessity is a strong word, but you ended up doing it because your fucking freezer is full of wild meat all season long, right? So you got, and not like when I grew up on moose meat and it was moose roast, moose sausage, or fried moose meat. That was it. That was your three options. I didn't have anything else, right? So you guys are a little bit more creative with what you're doing with your meat, and it gives you a lot more options. And when you rely on a wild game diet, then you've got to figure out new and exciting ways to make it fun and enjoyable to eat.
And not just cook till it's gray, like most of us would have grown up on, too, right? Yeah. Like, I'm sure the moose meat you ate was probably cooked till it was gray.
Well,
nope. And if you cut it too fast, it cut on fire.
Yeah. And I can remember, like, and still to this day, Mom is doing it. So like a moose roast, throw it in a roaster with two turkey legs. Like, that's what they do. That's the only bit of fat that meat's got is what's coming off the turkey. That's the only thing that gives it any, you know what I mean? So
come back with 3 days later and it was ready.
Like boiled dinner.
yeah. No, it, and Mark, and then, so it, what's really cool about, I'm not a cook. I'm trying to learn, but I've got a very, very small palate. Like, I'm not a very adventurous eater, but like, I know Merck, and I can't speak for Phil and Craig because I haven't been around them as much in those kinds of situations. But Merck, like, you and Josette would do like fucking a weekend of making sausage and making all that fucking stuff that you guys would keep. So, all
unfortunately, last fall while I was still in Newfoundland, we had the door left open to our utility room downstairs, and one of the cats, the biggest one, got in and unplugged the freezer.
Mongo.
No, Oliver, the big gray fella. So he got in and unplugged the freezer. He's 20 pounds, so he has the strength, right? He unplugged the freezer. Josette didn't notice till a week later when she opened the freezer to go get something, and everything was thawed. It was still a little cold, but it was all thawed. It was 2/3 to 3/4 of a freezer of moose, deer, goose, turkey, duck, cod, trout.
Oh, the humanity.
And salmon. And so we lost all of it. And you don't realize how much that is until your freezer's empty and you go out and buy $300 or $400 worth of meat. Butcher meat, and it takes up about this much space in the bottom of your freezer.
We lost our contents a few years ago as well.
I would cry. That would probably cook that cat.
But that's the only, and here's going to be my only reference to deer hunting on this show. The only reason I would be interested in deer hunting is just so I could stock my freezer. I have no desire to sit in a fucking stand and any of that shit for deer, but I would love to be able to have a fucking full deer in my freezer to be able to eat throughout the fall and winter, right?
They say deer balls is the cheapest meat, right?
Yeah, it's under a buck.
It's under a buck.
But I've had them. They can stay there.
Oh, yeah. Can I please come on, sign? Don't get. Oh no, it's not going to work. It's only thumbs up. Oh wait, no, the thumbs up.
Tip on the way out. I'll be signing autographs all night.
I don't know. Like the deer balls weren't that bad.
I didn't like them.
I'm not a big fan of putting balls in my mouth either. So, I'll just leave. It.
But Damien, I'm the same way. Like deer hunting for me, like I enjoy our week of deer hunting more so for the tradition of it. It's right. You know, my dad, my cousins, and now I see the group grow to, you know, my buddy comes out with us, and now it's like our kids and my buddy's boy who they've grown up hunting since they were little together. So now to see them start come out to the deer gang, I enjoy that part. But as far as like deer hunting itself, I can care less.
Yeah.
But having the venison in the freezer to put, and now again, because she hunts and now my son's out there, you know, we can get three deer in the freezer. That is a substantial amount of meat. You know, we don't buy hamburger anymore because we got deer, and I don't buy roast. Like I might buy the odd beef steak, just because I have kind of a hankering for a steak. And outside of that, like pretty well all the red meat in our freezer is wild game. It's either goose or deer, or if we're fortunate enough to have bear or someone who's like really kind to give us a moose or something like that. You know, pretty well everything. And we used to buy beef. We used to buy like a quarter of beef every year, and then all of a sudden it's like $800, $1,000 for a quarter, and you're just going, why? And
I have never had bear. I've never eaten bear.
Neither have I.
Delicious. No? I love it. It's probably one of my favorites.
I know Steve Sadulik tells me it's the best fucking meat he's ever had.
Yeah.
What were you saying?
Venison any day.
As long as you don't let bear sit too long. Bear's not something to hang overnight.
Yeah.
Oh, is that right?
Yeah. The fresher it is, the quicker it goes into the freezer, the better it is.
Okay.
Yeah. So the fat is delicate to go rancid easily.
Oh, bear, really, eh? So these fellas that go up to these bear camps and shit, so, you know, if you get an animal, and fuck, here I go, down another rabbit hole talking about something besides duck hunt.
You're doing good.
You know, these fellas that go up to these camps and stuff, and you get your animal, so what? You get your animal, you've got to come out of the camp right away?
Or have the means to keep it cold.
Well, that's what I mean. If you don't have the means to keep it cold, if you don't have a cooler or a fridge or whatever. Now, if it's late in the season and it's cold outside, well, then that's good, right? But if you're in a warm part of the season, then in that case, you get your animal. You've got to get it to the fucking butcher right away. Is that the case?
Or you have to leave it whole, other than like field dressing it, but just leave a smaller cavity hole and go to wherever the closest shop is that you can stuff it full of ice for your drive home.
And I have really, heard, and I've seen, because like I live just off the 400 between Barrie and Parry Sound, so like during the fall season, like there's trucks up and down the highway by our place, and I've seen guys where they've got freezers in their trailer with a generator.
I've seen that.
Yeah, they get the animal down, they get it dressed, and it's in the freezer, and they plug it into the generator and just keep it going on the drive home.
See, Mark, back where we're from in Newfoundland, we don't have to worry about our meat freezing because it's too warm. No. Not a problem.
The thing about bear is once it gets cold, you don't find bear around. They go into their dens and stuff, right?
They're typically hibernating by that, which is the best time of the year. Because a bear fucking not in the woods is a good time, if you ask me.
But that whole thing right there with just the thinking about what care you have to do with the animal is another reason why I find a lot of people who've come and talked to me about cooking wild game, and they go, oh, I didn't really like it. I've had it before. It wasn't good. And it really can delve back to how you handled that animal. Like and that's why our family's always been one to butcher our deer ourselves, because we've seen the deer that were left to hang in the tree with the hide on for 3-4 days and, you know, not washed or cleaned out.
Yeah.
And then it'll come to the butcher and you're just like, you notice that difference, that getting that heat out, you notice that difference in the meat. So it's like, if you want to possibly sabotage all your hard work by cutting a corner, you can do that, but you're going to pay the price.
Well, yeah. I remember, here we go. I remember caribou, right? So caribou wasn't something that typically migrated through my area growing up. But then, and it happened overnight, where the migration route changed, and we were seeing hundreds upon hundreds upon hundreds of caribou migrating right through my town. Right through the town. Like, I'm not joking when I say at 15, 16 years old, if we went on a snowmobile ride across the bog to get back into where the mountains are, there'd be so many caribou on that bog. Like, if you were the passenger on the back of that snowmobile, you could put your hands out like this and just rub the backs of snow. And I've done it. So it was like the Red Sea parting. They would just move to the side and let the snowmobile, because I lived in a national park, so there was no hunting. So they didn't have, and there was no predator, only predator. Well, there was a little bit of poaching, but that was okay. But that was okay. And honestly, not that you'll ever hear anybody say that they were advocating for poaching, but the small amount of poaching that was happening was keeping the herd healthy. And that was ultimately what was happening. And it wasn't a big deal. And it wasn't something that was enforced very stringently, if that makes sense.
And it was keeping families fed, because we know how hard the winters are down east. So
it kept the herd healthy and stuff like that. But when the herd started coming through, you would hear people say, well, I don't like caribou. I don't like caribou. I've had caribou. I didn't like it. It didn't taste good. The meat was bad, the whole bit. To which we come to find out, I don't know how we found out about it, but there's sweat glands on the hindquarters of caribou. And if you break those sweat glands when you're cleaning it, just burn it, because the meat is no good now. Yeah. And that's what was happening, was people weren't, they didn't know what they were doing. So
tarsal gland.
Very long way of telling the story to agree with what you said, Steve, but that's what it was people were shortcutting and not cleaning the animal, not dressing it properly, and then spoiling the meat, and then, oh, it's no good, and then they were turfing it, right? But once people found out how to properly dress it, fucking caribou is good, man, and I'm telling you, it is really good when it's dressed properly.
They're probably nicking the tarsal gland is what it is.
It's the same thing with deer.
Yeah.
Is white tails have them. Oh, yeah? Okay.
Yeah, you'll see the staining. Like, there's actual staining in their back legs. You see that's exactly where the tarsal glands are.
Really?
Yeah, just cut around it. Don't touch it. Continue cleaning your animal.
On that note, we're at around about the 60-minute mark, so here we go. It's awesome. Guys, thanks so much.
I approve with the amount of non-duck talk. Good.
Yeah, you approve of the big game talk, Mark? Yeah. I figured you would. I figured
this episode is endorsed by Mark.
Well, I missed it last week, so I get it done.
Yeah.
On that note, I did see a pile of ducks today. I was out turkey scouting, and all the fields around here are completely flooded, and there's just birds everywhere. There's swans, a pile of mallards, pintails, widgeon, and I love seeing widgeon in the spring when it's the only time to see them in full color. What else? Buffleheads, like buffleheads in flooded fields. That's how much water there is.
Oh, wow.
They lost.
Yeah,
and green wings too. Like, it's just so many birds out there right now.
I have
piles of turkey today.
Yeah, I'm seeing lots of turkey. I'm seeing lots of mallards, but I am not seeing Susies.
I drove
a bunch of greenheads, and I'm not seeing any hens around whatsoever. So I'm bit worried about the mallard population.
No, they'll make out just fine.
Yeah, I'm sure he will.
Yeah, I drove down to Pickering today, and there was just toms everywhere.
Yeah, I'm seeing
some of them by themselves, just out there shaking their moneymakers.
I'm still seeing big groups of birds still.
Really? Still? They're still all
collaborative. I've seen one flock. It was pushing 12, 15.
They haven't separated.
Is it cold there?
Yeah, it's still cold. It's still chilly.
Yeah.
It's been said, the last couple of days have been a little bit cooler, but it's been pushing 17 earlier part of the week and stuff, too.
We got sub-zeros coming here. Yeah.
You guys got a week
till
nighttime low.
Yeah.
Like, when is it?
A week.
Yeah, like this weekend, we got nighttime lows of zero.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that's not so bad, but I mean, you've had some warm weather, so that should be spreading them out a bit, though.
Yeah.
Yeah, they're starting to break up here.
Yeah.
Yeah, compared to, you know, 2-3 weeks ago, the groups are getting smaller.
I can tell you, I'm mourning a turkey opener. I'm wearing my deer hunting stuff. Just looking at the weather.
Yeah.
Hmm.
Yeah. I'll be wearing my deer hunting stuff.
Pop-up line and throw a heater, buddy.
Poor shit to carry.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Big game hunters. Sure. All right. On that note, ladies and gentlemen, this was episode 182 of the Union 0430. Thank you for listening. Please check out our sponsors. Like, subscribe, click, smash fucking buttons. I don't care what it is you do, but let's get some Jesus followers here. So
follow Lorianne and Steve.
Yeah, and follow Lorianne and Steve. Follow our sponsors. And thank you once again. Especially to the people that message us, because remember last week we were talking about Purina dog food, and we were like, well, it all comes from the fucking States anyways. I don't know what the big deal is, why we got to have it in the original bags. And James, our cigar aficionado, messaged me. How do you say that?
Schlemby.
Okay, thank you, Schlemby. Because I fucking bastardized it the last time I said his last name.
Got two bite fishing lures. There you go.
Yeah, so he messaged me and said, not Purina is made just down the road from him. And then there was another fella from Indiana. Fuck, I forget his name now. But anyways, he must be the only duck hunter in Indiana. I'm certain of it.
Is he from Gary, Indiana?
No, I don't know. Anyways, thank you to everybody that messages us and provides some clarity in some of the shit that we talk about on this show. And I'm not above someone telling me, hey, you were really wrong on what you said.
Yeah, you done messed up, A.A. Ron.
A.A. Ron, yeah. So we'll do a quick around the table as usual, and then we'll call it for a night. So we'll start off up in my top right-hand corner with Philly. To you, my man.
Steve and Lorianne, absolutely. Always a pleasure to have you guys on. And obviously, Lorianne's darling smile as usual. Because she just giggles a lot and blushes. But, yep. I do want to give a big shout out to Lorianne, thanking her for guiding me back to our booth at the Sportsman Show when I got lost one fucking day. Phil, what's going on? I don't know where I am.
Could you call my mom?
She took me under her wing. She's like, here, sweetheart, I can hold your hand so you don't fucking wander off again. And I'm going to take you right back to where you belong.
We're going to get to the monkey backpack next year.
We had that discussion. But yeah, always awesome to have you guys on. Steve, looking forward to the book. I might have to invest in a copy when that comes out. And more importantly, you got to get that goose pastrami recipe in there, because I think goose tastes like shit. I've eaten my fair share of goose jerky. That was some of the best damn goose meat I've ever had.
I love it. I'm glad you like it. And yeah, it's definitely going to be in there. That's why I had it at the show, just because it was something easy. And I mean,
well, it's like a little bait.
I had a girl actually come up and she was almost in tears because she's eating it. And she's like, I'm like, have you had goose? And no. I'm like, do you like it? She's like, yeah. She's like, goose is my favorite animal. Oh. I can't believe I'm liking this. And she felt guilty for liking how it tasted. And then she comes back later and comes back around for seconds, like an hour later with her mom. But she's just like, I feel terrible, but it tastes so good. And it's
you get over that real quick. Trust us.
Yeah. Yeah. You converted a vegan or right? Yeah.
Delicious murder.
Yeah.
With the goose pastrami. Yeah.
Yeah. Atta boy.
Now she hunts and fishes like crazy, yes. And she loves the whole thing.
That's going to get you past like the pearly gates alone. That right there. That's going to get you in. When
God knows I need it.
When you meet St. Peter, buddy, that's going to be top of the list right there with St. Peter. I'm telling you. Craig, to you, my man.
Oh, just good seeing everybody again. And I just want to touch on the whole community aspect. And anybody who already knows Stephen Laurien would definitely agree that there's a reason why they built such a community around them. You couldn't find better people. And I appreciate you guys kind of, coming and visiting the family and including us in your events as well. Because, it's I think for you guys to not build a really big community, you would have to try really hard. Because, it's everybody's just drawn to you guys, and for good reason. So, but no, you guys do amazing work, and you're even better friends. So, thanks.
Oh, you're Jesus. Awesome.
Wow.
Jeez.
I think Craig's looking for some fucking residuals from the sales of the book.
Beat that, Damien.
Jesus. All right, Mark, to you. Try and beat Craig, for fuck's sake.
Oh, my God.
No, well, I don't know if we can make Laurien blush some more, but it's working.
Not hard.
Yeah. It's good to see you guys. I know it's been a couple weeks, so it's good to see you again. I'm looking forward to the next time we cross paths again, whether it's on the show or wherever in person. I'm also looking forward to your book, Steve. I didn't know about this book until we started talking about it tonight. So that's good. As soon as whenever it gets out, I want a copy, so I need to find a way to hook up to get a copy off you. So
I'll make sure one gets out to you for sure.
And make sure you send whatever information is required to Damien so he can post it on his pages too.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
I appreciate that.
Yeah, absolutely. And I do, I am going to put this bug in, sorry, Mark, are you finished on your, you're done? Okay. So my turn to chat. I will put this bug in the ear because not that I think I'm above learning from your seminars, Laurien. It's not something that I do and go into those things. But I tell you, Steve, if you did a seminar on fucking cooking, I would attend that. And I really would. And I'll tell you why I would is because I'm starting to enjoy cooking. I haven't jumped right into the deep end yet, but I've started to enjoy doing little bits, and I would like to learn and I'll tell you how basic my fucking cooking skills are. Phil said to me one day, mustard is a great binder, and I looked at him like he had four heads because I had no idea what a fucking binder is. So, I married my wife because she's a good cook, and you can call that sexist or you can call it chauvinist or whatever, but it was a very important thing that my wife knew how to cook when we started dating. And I've started to learn that I enjoy cooking meat. That's my thing. So, it is something that I would probably make the trip up to hand over to check out if you did do something like that.
Mark, is your enjoyment of cooking in proportion to your THC content intake?
No. So my THC intake, that usually happens at around 8 to 9 o'clock at night, and it's usually Doritos and Cheetos at that time.
That's what I'm like. It's very proportionate to your potato chips, though.
Yes, very much so. And before all you fucking weirdos start freaking out because of THC, it's legal in Canada, all right? So chill the fuck out.
Medicinal.
Get off my cloud, man.
It turns black coma.
Laurien and Steve, to you guys.
I just want to follow Damien. Like, that's a great idea. We've talked about that kind of stuff. Because it's more just like coming up with the logistics. Like, how do you roll that out to make it, to make it accessible and easy to everyone? But like, we did start 2 years ago now, 2 years in a row, we've done a sausage making course, because that was something that's actually it's pretty easy, really. Like, once you get over that hurdle of just knowing what's involved,
right?
We started doing the sausage making courses, and they've been a pretty good hit. We've had people really enjoyed it, and it's that, I guess, that sense of like making something yourself that you would have never known or only ever bought from a store. So that kind of do it yourself attitude that goes along with it has been really well received. So we're going to keep doing those for sure too.
Cool.
Did you call it Sausage Fest?
I am not interested if it's called Sausage Fest.
I just made it in the front of the cover saying Sausage Fest. We're not getting too many ladies showing up to that one.
No. The Sausage King.
That was like Barney or Louise Morris or something calls me the Sausage King.
Lori?
And I'll let her.
Lori?
Honestly, thank you guys so much for having us on. It's always a good time getting together with you guys. And I would say this episode is probably the most humbling what I've had, because you guys are too kind.
Way too nice, guys.
Yeah, but we really appreciate it. Like I said, if we have it, obviously we're going to share, and I know you guys are very similar in that mindset, and I think through meeting you guys and through meeting other people that are like-minded, I think if we can keep it going and growing the community with more like-minded people, it's only going to get better.
Absolutely. No, 100%. And Lori, we've had a lot of conversations over the last little while. So you deserve everything that's coming towards you. And I love sitting on the sidelines and hearing the good news when you get the good news. And I love it. So good for you. And just nothing but good things coming for you. Just like I tell you all the time, you keep doing you, and good things will happen. Ladies and gentlemen, this is the Union 0430. We are not experts, and we'll never pretend to be. We are a group of friends that love one another's company, and God knows what we're going to talk about. So, big love. Surround yourself with good people. Until next time.